Annie, thank you very much indeed. We have now about sort of 25 minutes or so for questions and discussions. In the interest of time, can I make two observations? I'm going to try and take questions in sort of two or threes so that we try and save time that way. And can I respectfully ask people in the interest of time to keep their questions to no more than about 20 minutes? Because we're never going to get through it. No, if we could try and keep our questions relatively brief, that would be very helpful. So with that, opening up to questions. Can I just ask, there are roving mics coming down. Can I ask everybody if they would kindly just say who they are before they ask their question? Sam.
Thank you, John. First of all, could I thank the panelists for an excellent set of presentations? My name is Sam Meetha. I'm a former revenue official, and I plead guilty to having been responsible for the infamous film industry leaves introduced in 1997. I also led the introduction of the R&D tax credits, the large company R&D tax credits. I was really interested that it wasn't until Kevin came and made his presentation that we heard a reference to the most important factor in the introduction of tax reliefs, and that's politics. What's not always clear to external commentators is the fact that politics is what drives, is the main factor behind the introduction of taxes. And very often, officials from the revenue and treasury put forward all the detailed briefing to ministers, but at the end of the day, we have to bow to what ministers want. In relation to the film industry reliefs, for example, I must confess, because I became responsible for dealing with the consequences as well, when I came back to that after a while, was the fact that we were frankly taken aback by the behavioral responses to the relief. But the design of the reliefs was partly a consequence of EU state aid rules. And the fix that was referred to in 2007 was only possible because of changes in EU rules. The other factor is that ministers and officials usually very, very pleased to have the EU state aid rules to hide behind, because ministers are under constant bombardment from industry and other stakeholders in the tax system to change the rules. And it's very easy to hide behind the EU state aid rules. And so Brexit will actually produce a lot of pressures for ministers, which will be unwelcome. Very quickly, a couple of other things. The design of tax reliefs is also motivated by the desire to make sure that they're used. And the fact that there's extensive consultation on reliefs means that that's possible. But equally, there's the legislative issues to be taken into account, namely the fact that ministers are normally more keen to introduce new measures rather than to fix measures which their predecessors introduced. But I think what you've done today is actually shown a very powerful searchlight on a very important issue. But I'd suggest the kind of comments I've made would help to complete the picture. Thank you.
John.
John Cullinane, Tax Policy Director of the CIOT. The question really was on one of Helen's slides, which was picked up on by Annie, showing in essence that the business tax reliefs were the sort of small beer of the tax reliefs world. I just wondered whether we're kind of missing, part of the iceberg there. Things that are classified as personal tax reliefs can nevertheless be, in quotes, corporate welfare. So, you have ISAs, the banks are unable to pay a lower rate of interest. A supermarket is able to, change a biscuit into a cake or whichever way around it is. You may be sure it doesn't sort of, when it wins its case, it doesn't retrace, all the individuals who bought the biscuits and, pay them back their VAT. Financial services exemption, do we overinvest as a country in financial services, or certainly encourage businesses to dress up their value added as financial services, and so on and so forth? And there just seems to be a whole angle there that we ought to look at.
Other question? Sir, please.
Warwick Clayton, Policy Exchange. I'd be very interested in your perception collectively of the relative economic efficiency of tax expenditures versus conventional public expenditure. And secondly, what feel you might have for your impressions of the relative use of tax expenditures across the OECD?
Thank you. Should we take those three together? Helen, I don't know if I can turn to you first, you know, particularly the last 2 points about,
sure.
You know, do we basically oversimplify what a relief and a business relief is,
yeah.
And what use do we make of those expenditures?
Yeah. So I think it gets back to the same, so on John's point, the same problem I was highlighting about how we classify these things. So one is just, once you have a relief, and how do you classify it into, is it structural or a tax relief? But also, is it business or not business? And you're completely right. There are some reliefs that are personal that affect businesses. There are plenty of business reliefs that also filter down to the personal level. So in some ways, I don't think it's particularly helpful to try and put them in categories. I think what we have to do is the much harder task of looking at each one independently, thinking about why is it there, who does it impact, and not just who hands over the tax revenue or doesn't hand it over, but who ultimately in the chain of individuals is benefiting. So I completely agree with the sentiment that there are lots of other reliefs that don't neatly fall into some bucket, but that we'd want to consider in the round. So that's definitely true. To Warwick's question, so across OECD, one of the really tricky things there, I was tempted to show you guys a graph of the OECD, but countries used such different measures of what counts as tax expense. So some countries basically say everything that a government wanted to do isn't a tax relief. So those countries have much, much lower tax reliefs, but because they've changed the definition. So I decided not to show you because I think it's so misleading. Like, there's even a study that shows the UK in two different states, depending on how you classify them, they're massively different. So I think the answer is we don't know how it compares because countries just define them so differently. And again, I think we have to think about it for different types of relief. So if you look at our capital allowances, as Annie referred to, we don't have particularly generous capital allowances, but there are other cases where we do have certain allowances. So it sort of varies a bit. And again, just to finish off on the tax expenditure versus spending, I think that's tricky too, because some of them are clearly like tax spending, and you would want to put them alongside comparing R&D tax credits to, say, a direct spending on R&D. Others, like trying to shape the base of the corporate tax, isn't really about spending. It's about trying to design the tax system in a way that reduces distortion. So again, I think we have to look on a case-by-case basis to decide how we want to compare them.
Kevin, it's about coming to you on this sort of comparison point between countries. I'm sure this is stuff you've looked at. I mean, how does it seem from the sort of academic point of view?
Well, I think, as Helen said, I mean, she'll know the Merlies report, which actually did quite a lot on international comparisons. And I think the kinds of things that do come out are that capital allowances are quite low in the UK. However, tax expenditures are relatively high. And actually, the overall effect on taxation on corporations then is, which is why I'm saying, is relatively low. If we look at tax as a percentage of overall tax take, the UK is actually lower than any other G7 country, for example. And it's that kind of thing when I'm talking about, coming back to your point about the politics, where I think that we have to look at all of these things. So we have to look at tax allowances, but we also have to look at tax allowances alongside tax take. We have to look at corporate tax rates, and we have to look at the balance between these, because that's what politicians do. When they apply, they don't just provide tax allowances out of thin air, or they don't just emulate what the country's doing. They do it as part of the overall tax package, and in relation to tax, and in relation to the overall tax effect and behavioural effects, which I think are really important, and the knock-on effects are on government spending and on services. Also have to be made sense of in relation to that. So I think the UK is an interesting study internationally. As I said, we could have this debate about where it actually lies in terms of tax allowance and corporation tax. My argument tends to be that actually corporations have a relatively good tax deal here when we take into account the whole gamut, and that corporations need to contribute more. Why do I argue that? I argue that because actually they get a lot back. And that's in all our interests as well. See, my argument isn't simply that corporate welfare with waste and the undeserving corporation. It's actually just to argue that we need to look at this thing in the round. We need to look at what corporations extract from the state, and we need to look at what they contribute, and we need to look at how that relates to citizens' welfare. If we want to move towards a society that operates better, I think, or what works better, both for businesses and for citizens.
Kevin, to go back to the political point, do we kid ourselves that actually there is a a really effective, logical basis to which these reliefs are introduced, or is it actually all about the politician just trying to grab a headline and there's no logic to this in the first place at all?
Well, I think there are certain occasions where I think that probably has been the dominant factor. I mean, from the NAO's perspective, what we would like to see is better evaluation at the outset of whether the tax expenditure is the right policy instrument to deliver a policy objective, or whether it would be better met through a grant or a spending program in some form. And admittedly, my knowledge is a little bit dated now, but from what we saw, there wasn't enough of that. Sometimes tax expenditures are brought in with what seemed to be quite a lot of haste, but that is improving, and Treasury extended the period for consultation around them. So, I mean, I think it's a mixed picture, but there are certainly other countries that will do more to evaluate whether a tax expenditure is the right way to deliver an objective, and I think we could do more of that. On that other question about which is most efficient, I do think it varies. I mean, there's a tendency to think that a tax expenditure might be more efficient, might need less administration, but then sometimes HMRC has to work very hard to counter possible avoidance activity or even evasion. So I don't think it's always the case that it's more efficient to have a tax expenditure, and I think there are equally arguments about how to target your policy instrument most effectively, which can, again, depending on the nature of and the sector, it might vary between tax expenditures and spending programs. So I think that's an area that could do with more evaluation.
Annie, since so much of business is now international in all sorts of ways, you know, to what extent from your members do you get the very clear sense that their investment decisions in terms of where they make their investments are significantly affected by the reliefs that we've been talking about?
So I think tax is always only one part of the investment picture, and I don't think we would say that, you know, tax reliefs and the tax system is always the deciding factor. It is one of a number of elements which play a role in the competitiveness of the business environment. You know, other things are, you know, the amount of available skilled labour plays a massive role in whether firms decide to invest here or elsewhere. Similarly, the amount of infrastructure. But what it's about is making sure that you have that tax is an enabler, not a disabler. And sometimes we go down the route of creating, not necessarily hostile, but you have to be mindful that increasingly businesses do have a choice, and particularly multinationals, they do have a choice about where to locate their investment. We're not the only, you know, advanced economy in the world with highly skilled labour, you know, strong infrastructure and a good supply chain in various industries. There are lots out there. And I think increasingly that's coming to the fore as we kind of move through the Brexit process and you see other countries like the US with their recent tax reform. They're alive to the fact that tax does play a part in that picture. And as I kind of said in my few words before, I think the rate is important, but the process and the administration around the tax system, whether that's the tax take or whether that's the reliefs, plays a really important part. I think businesses are massively grateful, as well as me from a personal perspective, that we now are moving to one single fiscal event in the autumn. But okay, yes, that means less tax changes each year, but it also means a more prolonged and protracted evaluation process. So that should lead to the better evidence gathering that I think other panellists have mentioned. I would say, though, there's still room to go. I mean, still consultations coming out with a six-week window over Christmas, which I don't think anybody is grateful for, and certainly I'm not. But we do kind of need to have that period of where we have a proper consultation, whether it's on reliefs or whether it's on changes to tax, which increase the tax burden for business. It's the same. You know, you need to have reciprocal processes of tax policy making. And then when it gets to the delivery, it really needs to be about, you know, does the administration of that relief work? Is there clarity for businesses who we actually want to use that relief? Are they able to access it with ease? And so I think to the point around politics made, I think yes, politics always plays a part. Obviously, CBI is an impartial organisation, doesn't have political interests. But, you know, I think the point around the process is that if we have a proper process of evidence gathering, evaluation, consultation with the people who are actually going to be affected by changes, and then, you know, scrutiny of the legislation before it's introduced. I'm not saying it takes politics out of the equation, but it certainly allows for a bit more debate around the issues on a kind of, you know, on the technical level, on the academic level, before changes are kind of whipped through at rapid speed, because I don't think that is the right way to make policy in any way. And sorry, just to say on the kind of the international competitiveness, I agree that it's kind of very difficult to measure that. But as I say, I think, you know, businesses on the ground see, you know, they are able to see the differences in tax treatments, both in terms of the rate and the administration. So we always need to keep an eye on that.
Other questions from the floor? One over there.
Hi, I'm Donald Stark. I'm taking over shortly on as head of business investment tax at Treasury. I'm just picking up on a point that I think Kevin Farnsworth was making earlier on, that there are you've been thinking of that might well be used in order to achieve the same kind of policy objectives in a different way. I'm slightly intrigued as to what you've got in mind in this area here, because some of the more direct government-focused programs, such as grants and things like that, will inevitably have different types of administration and other things, requirements around them, that would turn this country into slightly a different type of country, a bit more maybe like a kind of South Korean approach to industrial strategy. I was just wondering whether you could kind of give an idea about where you're thinking going in that direction.
Thank you. Other comments? Glyn.
Glyn Falilov, Group Tax Director of Informa and Chairman of the Institute's Tax Committee, Technical Committee. This government in particular has been very keen at focusing or granting tax incentives, tax credits to the creative industries. Is there any evidence from either the UK or elsewhere that such measures are both successful and sustainable and that they benefit the wider economy?
Okay. At the back over there.
My name's Dennis O'Connor. I'm a chartered accountant. I also happen to be a shareholder of Barclays. And I just look at the tax policy there. Their 2017 tax statement I looked at before I came here today, and it's all about tax being an enabler. There are 47,000 employees in the UK make average profit of £37,000. There are 41 employees in Luxembourg make an average of 8.9 million profit. What is Luxembourg doing right that we're doing wrong?
Thank you. Chris.
Chris Sanger, EY, Head of Tax Policy. I've got a number of observations really just to add and then a question at the end. I mean, I guess the first thing I was going to observe was that actually the mechanism also matters when we do tax relief. So I know I was with Sam when we were looking at R&D tax credits inside the Treasury, and one of the key elements of R&D tax credit was that the decision maker on who would spend the R&D was the business itself, who at least properly understood what was going on with that R&D, rather than the government giving a grant and having to understand it. So I think when we look at the validity of our R&D, we need to, incentives and elements, we need to think about the mechanism itself. The second observation I was going to do is one that, having been through a number of scorecard meetings with ministers, the rationale for a particular policy can actually change over time. There's also a different rationale for not removing a kind of an element of the tax system than there is for actually introducing it. And I'm reminded of the analogy that Sir Edward Troup said in his first time inside Treasury as a special advisor, where he likened the tax system with all its reliefs and incentives to a stretched rubber sheet. I probably should go on to explain what that means.
You should, actually, yes.
And that every tax incentive or every relief is a ball bearing that has been dropped on that sheet. Now, every time you add a new tax relief, you change everything else that's going on there. But similarly, when you remove tax relief, you also disturb that rubber sheet. So the kind of item when we talk, particularly from an AO perspective, about changing things, we need to understand what is going to change around the rest of the environment. And then finally, an observation of what we've seen in the last week or so, we've seen the EU pushing ahead or wanting to push ahead on the digital side with moving to a turnover tax based on some of the digital companies, which of course is the ultimate one of no reliefs. If we're seeing this, are we expecting maybe to see this happen more often in the future? I.e., are we actually debating something here that is going to be a matter for the past rather than a matter for the future?
Kevin, since we started with a question about, for you, you mentioned other policy tools. If I can ask you briefly what they might be.
Can I just briefly respond to a previous point and actually bring that point in, I think. I think, as Annie indicated, there are a number of ways that the UK can compete going forward, and I think there are the right ways and the wrong ways. I did some work recently on looking at how the UK sells itself to international capital and different countries. It was referring to a journal article in the Journal of Social Policy. I argued there that the way that the UK competes will have wide-ranging implications for citizens. And actually, the UK tends to compete in the wrong ways. And I think a good comparator, I think, is the US or Sweden. Now, Sweden actually attracts huge amounts of inward investment, but it doesn't do so by selling, by competing on the basis of cheap labour costs and low taxation. And I think the way the UK needs to go forward and compete more on the basis of higher taxation and higher value. Which brings me back to the point I think that Donald raised. There's a whole range of post-Brexit, a whole range of grants that have been made that probably will no longer be made or need to be made for. And then there are different types of assistance that seem to be working. The Regional Growth Fund, for example, I think has been really quite important. Catapults has been really quite important. There's the issue and the question of the role and function of Green Investment Bank and the British National Investment Bank, or something along those lines, which actually can make use of the UK government's ability to borrow cheap and then lend on to businesses, which I think could be important. I think most importantly going forward is how does the UK make up for the lack of the European Social Fund? Because that currently redistributes, there's currently a great deal of redistribution to poorer regions through that kind of assistance. What happens post-Brexit? If we rely simply on tax allowances, then we're going to actually not be helping poorer regions. So I think we need an industrial strategy that incorporates all of those things. But, as I said, doesn't try to simply drive the UK towards the US kind of model, but actually maintains the UK as a European social democratic model, would be my argument. And actually, I think that capital, corporate welfare and social welfare can work together in order to try to engineer that.
Perhaps I can ask the other three members of the panel the question sort of what's Luxembourg doing right and the rest of us doing wrong, if you accept the premise of the question, and also to pick up on this point about creative industries and whether some of the focus on creative industries is actually misplaced.
Helen, can I start with you? Quick fire answer so we can get to the drink. So on creative industries, no, as far as I know, there isn't particularly good evidence on the effects of these incentives on that industry, which I think makes it particularly important that if we are going to start fiddling around in that area, we have to start with a very clear rationale and a very clear mechanism in place how we're going to evaluate them rather than just, it's uncertain, and you can make policy when it's uncertain, but we should be really clear at what we're doing. On Luxembourg, I mean, I think that throws up a much bigger issue, which is one that Chris was touching on too, about how we allocate profits across countries. Now, no one really has cracked quite the answer to that because conceptually it's a difficult problem. I think the issue about are we going down a road that says, well, let's just tax turnover if we can. And the problem with that is, and maybe we are getting rid of reliefs in general, the problem is that we are being led a lot by politics, which I completely agree with Sam, obviously leads a lot of these things, but we're forgetting the economics. I think it would be a shame if, in trying to tackle the problem like Luxembourg, we end up with just a worse design tax system because we didn't bother to step back and design one properly. I think Ed had a, you know, Ed Troop's quote was completely right. Reliefs interact a lot, and once you add one, it can be hard to take them away again. So we should be really, really careful about which ones we add, and not just, you know, chuck them onto that rubber sheet, without thinking about it.
And Rob, from your perspective and some of the work you've been doing recently, do you think that we're getting this wrong, and Luxembourg and places like Ireland are getting this right, or is that just a short-term problem?
Well, I'm not sure it's a short-term problem, but I agree with what Helen really said about the Luxembourg situation. I think it is a wider, much bigger issue. I think on the rubber sheet analogy, one thing that occurred to me was that the Office of Tax Simplification made some recommendations back in about 2011 about a number of reliefs it recommended should be withdrawn for various reasons. And I think we found when we looked at what had happened that Parliament had abolished 48 reliefs, which is roughly the same number that was recommended to be abolished, but over that same period had introduced another 134 reliefs. So there tends to be a lot more ball bearings landing on the rubber sheet than are ever taken off of it, which I think might be a problem in the long run.
And to sort of conclude from a business perspective, as Chris said, suggestion we might move more and more towards sort of turnover taxes and, are we all wasting our time thinking about reliefs? Because actually we're not going to be taxing profits in the future anyway.
I think Chris is right. And I think both what Helen and Rob have said is right, which is actually taxing turnover is perhaps a mallet to crack a nut. But I think the other problem is that, first of all, it's not a question about reliefs. It's about a question about does the international tax framework fairly distribute between countries the kind of tax revenues that governments could potentially raise. And so that's a question about equity between governments, not between, kind of business and society necessarily. And I think the other thing is it's worth reflecting that the OECD has done a lot of work in the area of kind of base erosion and profit shifting, which was obviously the avoidance question. Questions around kind of digital are slightly on from that, because they're about not necessarily about avoidance, but about that question about the fair distribution of tax revenues between countries. But I think it's also important to note that, BEPS has not been introduced or adopted unanimously across all countries, and that includes countries close to home, and so there is still quite a lot of work to be done, and in fact the UK is a kind of front runner of some of that process, for good or bad, and has gone further, including things like the diverted profits tax, which is a step on from the international process. So I think what businesses feel is there's still a lot of work to be done to actually implement those huge number of recommendations that came out of that process. But ultimately, ideas around kind of revenue tax, they are fundamentally flawed, because what you're saying is we're going to tax businesses whether they make a profit or not. Now, if you imagine a small business, that's new to a market versus a massive business, how does that seem fair? Because that small business is probably not making much profit at the start compared to perhaps a larger business which has reached maturity. So it really does act as a barrier to entry fundamentally, that idea of taxing revenues. And I know there's been these ideas of, well, we could create exemptions for, but we're back to the same problem, aren't we, which is you create a tax system and then you create a load of reliefs within that, which is the point that people have been making around complexity. So it sounds like a simple idea, but ultimately it's very difficult to implement. I think the other challenge is that, as a political one, which is there's a lot of pressure to do something about this kind of perceived problem. And actually, it needs the multilateral agreement, and it needs the kind of the conduit, which is the OECD, to drive proper change, rather than everybody going off and doing their own thing, because this isn't a domestic issue. This is an international issue that needs to be addressed as such, rather than, everybody coming up with their own different schemes, which just adds to the complexity of the overall tax system. And ultimately we've argued that complexity creates chance for avoidance and evasion, which we don't want. So I would kind of agree with what others have said, but also kind of throw into the ring that if we want to address this problem, we need to do it not as the UK, but as the UK and all of the kind of OECD countries as well.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm afraid, genuinely sad to say, because it's a fascinating discussion, we've run out of time. Apologies to those people who didn't get a chance to ask their questions, but please, I'd invite everybody to join us for a drink downstairs and continue this fascinating discussion. But can I just once again, on your behalf, thank all of our speakers for a fascinating discussion. The drinks are available downstairs.